Hello, everybody. Joe Wren here from WFIU News. We are on Facebook Live with Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton. We do this once a month. It's our Ask the Mayor program. Mayor Hamilton, thank you so much for being with us today.
Of course, Joe, good to be with you again.
As always, there's just so much to get to in about 20, 25 minutes. So let's get going. COVID update. Friday's weekly press conference, officials worried the spreading Delta variant, stagnating vaccination rates, 56% Monroe County residents are fully vaccinated. More data, 20% of positive cases are that Delta variant. Little concerning, especially when the state was going from about 100 to 200 new cases a day and then shot up to 560 a day. Are you concerned?
Yes, I am, Joe. It's really frustrating. I mean, here we are in July. I think you probably remember, we thought maybe July last year, there was some hope that that would really be climbing out of this thing. And of course we didn't, and we're still not there. These are really disturbing and concerning trends in the state and in the country and locally. We haven't seen the same real doubling or tripling of hospitalizations or deaths yet, which is great and important, but we know how to fix this, and it's just really frustrating that we can't get our vaccination numbers up higher. We're working with our own employees. We're working with the community. I want to applaud again institutions that mandate it, require it, seriously incentivize it. It really does concern me that over the next two months, we could see serious backsliding, and there are people in the hospital and dying who shouldn't be.
Any threshold for mandatory masks or any type of shutdowns again? Is that being talked about at all?
Well, we meet weekly as a group that's been meeting for over a year and a half almost now, and we follow the health. We have great fortune here of having IU and their extraordinary health and medical expertise, as well as IU Health here, as well as our health department. And it's really that trio that can be so helpful to people like me, who's not an epidemiologist or a medical expert or a school system or county government, to help give us guidance. I know we're all working very closely. I know we're open to continuing to do whatever we need to do to protect our public and protect our economy and the recovery. So it's frustrating. I mean, you heard Dr. Fauci say, if this is how we had approached smallpox or polio, we'd still have them. And what a tragedy that would be. But we need to get rid of this disease. So I just sure hope people will talk to their loved ones, talk to their physicians and their healthcare advisors, their spiritual advisors, whomever it takes, to remind us this is how we get out of this is through vaccinations. They're safe, they're effective. Most of the world is desperate to get these vaccines, and we have them free and available here, so let's use them.
Something else I think came out of that press conference, 12 to 15 year olds, the lowest rate of vaccinations. So, and schools are gonna open soon. Is there a type of strategy to get children vaccinated?
Well, we're meeting with the school superintendents, with that group I've mentioned of health and local experts, to do those conversations as well. These are tough decisions. You'll always get second guessed on what you do, but all we can ask is that everybody base it on science, base it on public health, and do all that we can to keep everybody safe as much as possible and move us forward as we all want to move forward. But we just got to rely on the science and the health experts.
Mm-hmm. Quick question on the 900 bedroom apartment complex that got final approval, former Kmart site over there on the east side by the mall. Right now, a huge parking lot, vacant building will all go away, more housing, no retail, but a big park. It was not what was envisioned there pre-COVID. Is this development good for Bloomington?
Well, I think it is. The one of the steps is a plan commission, which is made up of residents of Bloomington representing all kinds of different interests. And they voted unanimously, I believe, to support going forward with this development. Everybody can see things they might do differently, but look, we know we need more housing. This includes both student housing and workforce-oriented housing. We know having a great big 95% hardscape unused place is not a good thing for the city. There's tons of retail around there, of course, very close. So it's on a bus line. It's a major transit line. So there's a lot of really good positive things about it. The fact that we have people who want to invest in Bloomington is also a good signal that they think the community is continuing to thrive and do well. And that's a good signal. And, you know, we're going to continue to work to have strong, good developments of all kinds of housing and all kinds of other buildings all across the city. But this is a positive step forward for sure.
Some question that there was no requirement for affordable housing like other projects. What's the requirement for that?
Well, you know, let me first say I'm really frustrated again that the state legislature prohibited us from having requirements for affordable housing. Inclusionary zoning is popular around the country. It's effective. It's the best way to get affordable housing in this kind of development. And state legislature, in a very ill-advised move from my perspective, outlawed cities all across the state from using that. So we have to do other things. We have to use our zoning code. We have to use revenues that we can generate from other places. We have to use incentives, which we do all of those. And we're actually continuing to talk to the developers of that site about potential incentives for workforce affordability, which I hope may come to pass. But the simple answer is the legislature doesn't let us do what we ought to do. So we work very hard to increase affordability. It's built into the new Unified Development Ordinance, and we're going to continue to tweak that. Another development on 14th Street will have affordable housing, and we're going to continue to grow the 1,000 new units that we have over the last few years, a step at a time.
I think we need to hear a little bit more about that great flood, 2021, June. You know, some areas had up to 8 inches of rain. It was similar flooding to what happened in 2008. A lot of people wondering, you know, why did this happen again?
Well, the short answer is it happened again because we had the once in a century rain, as you said, of 6 to 8 inches in 1 hour, not just even over 48 hours, but basically 6 inches in 1 hour. And there is no infrastructure system that we have that can handle 6 inches in 1 hour. We are expanding the downtown stormwater system, and we're going to double it in size over the next year or so. That's going on now. But even if it were doubled today and that rain happened again, we would have serious flooding expected downtown if we got 6 inches in 1 hour. So there's lots of things to be done. You know, we have to look at building resilience. This is probably climate change related. We're going to see more severe events like this. I was reading about Evansville and other places that have, you know, they see these things happening with more intense rainstorms, even while the West is drier and suffering terribly from fires. It's so we're going to have to work on resilience in our buildings. We're looking at that in our fire headquarters and our police headquarters. But we may have to rethink how they're structured, where they're located. We have to look at green solutions as well, more green roofs, more creating inside our watersheds ways to manage rain as it falls to hold it where it is. Right now, you know, the Kmart parking lot is a great example. When rain falls on that, it rushes off immediately, and having more green space will help us. We're continuing to look at that. But look, this is climate change and trying to develop ways to manage it we're all going to have to be working together and creative. I will thank, we have a very collaborative and cooperative and resilient community. We had a celebration last week of downtown. In fact, we upgraded some lights and some other things to celebrate that. And I know merchants who took it in the midsection the couple of weeks before were back out and ready to come back and do what they can to restore the downtown.
The Hidden River project, I think that's what, about $13 yeah. million undertaking, will help with some of that water, and that's a part of what a connector in the middle of the city.
That's the doubling in size that I've mentioned. Joe, this is the river that runs through campus, and most of this watershed is on IU campus. Literally goes underground under the downtown right there at 6th and Indiana, and comes out at First and Walnut and College. And in between, it runs underneath our downtown. And we're doubling the size of that. People who remember the big dig from about 2000, and we're now completing that finally. And that will help. But again, that will not stop a 6-inch in an hour rainfall from overwhelming the stormwater system.
Well, then something else I've learned too in some of our reporting, that double intake will help, of course, downtown, but that's being dispersed into Clear Creek, which then that can't necessarily handle all of the water, and some apartments down at that end are getting flooded. So this is something that's a long-term solution, right?
It is. And look, you know, we have places like the Environmental Resilience Institute at Indiana University that help municipalities like us and others look at that. I know our city utilities met with the Corps of Engineers as well in the last week or two to identify any steps we can take. This is a problem all around the country. It maybe should remind us how important it is to take steps on climate change and to try to not only prepare for these rainstorms, but take the steps today that we need to reduce the impact of climate change in the decades ahead.
Let's dig into annexation. I know we've been talking about this the last few months and done a lot of reporting on it. One area we really haven't talked much about is the police protection. Mm-hmm. And this really came up I saw in May, Bloomington Police Detective Jeff Rogers on Facebook publicly posted a letter to you on how the plan to add more police officers won't work. And I wanted to get your comment on that, because, you know, he mentions how the city has hired 65 officers since you took over the January 2016, but 67 have resigned. And I think his point being that with 92 officers hired, budgeted to have 100, how do you expect to hire that many more officers by January 1st, 2025 for annexation?
Yeah, I appreciate that question, Joe. And I've met with Detective Rogers and the head of the police union, Fraternal Order of Police as well. And of course, meet regularly with the police chief. I don't think it's a secret to note that being a police officer has been a challenging job over the last several years, and that police departments and their relationship to the communities they serve has been evolving and sometimes stressful. We're not immune to that. Every city in Indiana and basically every city in America is kind of struggling to hire officers. We have very high standards in Bloomington. We have not lowered them in terms of the kind of officers that we want. Well-educated, well-trained, the right personality and judgments and experience that we want to build. So we are going to work really hard. I've got a budget coming up. We have negotiations with the police union next year. I'm confident that we have 4 years to develop this force to cover whatever annexation is approved by the city council. And once that approval is done, which we expect in September, we'll be implementing a 4-year plan to move forward. Part of what we do is enhance our ability to attract and retain police officers. We have some take-home car programs, some housing programs to help people deal with expensive housing. We're also expanding the kind of the range of the police department. As we've talked about before, we have social workers now. We have 3 social workers. We have community service specialists. These are non-sworn members, non-armed members of the police department who can help do some of the work of the police department and keep public safety. So it's a whole mix and wide range of approaches. I'm confident we can move forward well and provide the services our public wants. If and when we annex, we'll be ready when those, that's why you have a 2 or 3 or 4 years to get your annexation effective so that you can ramp up the services that are needed.
But, you know, it's been shown and you said twice that, you know, you said that you're confident, but it's just been shown the city can't keep a full police staff? So what would be maybe more detail of how that would be done if, and of course we should say, we don't know the whole scope of what annexation will end up being too, right? So that number can change, but how, why are you confident that the city can keep a full staff after annexation?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, look, there are sometimes, what should we say? There's sometimes dueling facts or data or statistics that are used by different folks. It is not unusual for any department, police or fire or parks or anybody, to have not every position filled at any time. We typically fund, there's transitions and stuff, but look, it's been challenging to hire sworn officers. There are fewer people applying to be sworn officers, and cities are kind of competing in some ways for those officers, like we are. We, for example, when you ask how I'm confident, I just swore in a new officer the other day, and I think four officers a couple of weeks ago. The new housing allowance that we have helps attract officers. We offer up to about $500 a month for rentals, or up to $12,000 for a down payment for a house in the city, to encourage our police officers. We allow take-home cars now in the city, and some limited for special officer uses out who don't live in the city, but obviously serve the city. We're continuing to evaluate what the market is like, and we will continue to do so. I think in the budget that you'll see next month, we're going to be presenting a public safety budget that will reflect that, look, the world is evolving and we got to evolve with it, both on the sworn officer side, but also, as I said, on the non-sworn officer side, because it's not clear that we have the same challenge on the non-sworn officer side in terms of hiring and perception and such. And all of this too, Joe, as you remember a year ago, you know, think about the context of policing and community relationships with police. So we have a future policing task force that's going to be helping us advise from the community how we move forward. So I'm very confident this city and this community, as we always have, will protect public safety. We may evolve over the next several years to do that, but I'm very confident we'll do so. That's the first job of a mayor, and I'm fully committed to make sure we get that done.
I see the city has added virtual office hours to discuss annexation. One is this Thursday, noon to 2, and I think there's a Facebook event, a Facebook Live event on Friday at noon as well. So how does the one Thursday, I guess that's a virtual office hours, how does that work?
Well, you know, this is ongoing, Joe, since we kind of restarted the annexation after we were so rudely interrupted 4 years ago by the state legislature. We've done a lot of different public outreach, both through elected officials and kind of direct folks responsible, like the head of the school system or the head of library or the solid waste district, et cetera, but also just the general public. We have active website, phone lines, FAQs, that kind of thing, but we're continuing to do meetings and offerings. I think I'm on the Facebook Live on Friday just to see if there's any questions anybody wants to ask me. We also have staff, as you referenced, doing kind of office hours. If you don't want to phone and you don't want to use the website or emails, you can come in either virtually or in person and ask a question. Of course, there's a big public hearing that's August 4th, and all of this is just trying to make sure people get their questions answered if they have any.
You know, I'm sure getting a lot of questions. Some of these that I see, I don't want to get into specifics, but like I saw a video with residents in a proposed area worried that they'd have to give up their cow. I guess they have a cow. Are there certain instances where things will be grandfathered into the newly annexed areas so that people don't have to give up something they already have?
There are, Joe, and that's the kind of question that's great if you want to call a specific question like that about a chicken or a cow or something like that. We do a lot of, there's a lot of grandfathering in if you have that use now, if you're using your property in a certain way now, when you join the city, and of course that doesn't happen till January 2024, so it's a ways off, whatever does get annexed, you do get, there is grandfathering in I'm not sure if that's the right term I'm supposed to use anymore, grandparenting in or something, but you get to keep doing what you're doing. Now there are, you know, not everything. For example, there are rules against open burning inside the city that when you become part of the city, that likely will be in effect. And the idea is, you know, you're closer to your neighbors or that kind of thing. So it's good to ask if you want to. There are a lot of questions under the, in the website, frequently asked questions that may answer some of the basic questions that you might have.
And we'll link to those virtual office hours. There's one August 12th, August 9th, August 4th. That's the public hearing, as you said, but that's also, it's virtual and in person, right?
Yes, it is. Either way, you can come in person. It starts at 3 o'clock, so it's earlier than usual on that Wednesday, August 4th.
I know we just have 4 minutes left, but I wanted to get to a couple other things before we go. People might be interested in the ribbon cutting. There's a new playground at Butler Park.
Yes, you know, we always try to upgrade and freshen our playgrounds, and this is a new one in Butler Park. Everyone's welcome to come. I think Thursday at 1 o'clock is their kind of play time, and then 1:30, the actual ribbon cutting of Butler Park, a great new playground. So everyone's welcome to come to that. It's always fun to see those structures activated.
And I just heard about a Kirkwood canopy of lights. We all know the downtown, the square canopy of lights at Christmas. What's the Kirkwood canopy of lights?
Well, thanks, Joe. You know, the Kirkwood, of course, is a wonderful avenue, kind of bridging between the campus and the downtown square. And during the pandemic, we've explored and found ways to activate that five block area. And there's a couple, two and a half blocks that are actually closed to traffic now through October, the end of October. And there's a lot more outdoor dining and activities. And we had a group of folks who said, hey, maybe we can spice this up a little bit. And I want to give a shout out and thanks to Cass the Electric and the Downtown Bloomington Inc. and the Kirkwood Cooperative Association, Community Association. All together, they actually, it's kind of like a barn raising. They went out and found pieces to put together and lights and all. But I think it's really beautiful now. There's a canopy over one block of Kirkwood that we're experimenting with and see how people like it and feel. And it's kind of, you know, a little bit, not really temporary, but it's maybe not what we would do if we decide we're going to do it full scale. But check it out if you can. I think it's the Dunn to Grant block of Kirkwood has those lights. And if you're there in the dark, you won't miss them. You'll see it.
Thank you so much. We have a minute and a half left, but I always like to leave the last word to you. Do you have any special announcements or things you'd like to say?
Well, thanks, Joe. I always appreciate the time. There it always seems like there's too much to talk about. City Council comes back in this week. They've been off for a month. A couple interesting things. One, the biannual, the every other year city survey is going to be released. A city survey during a pandemic is a little different. People are a little stressed and it's evident. But we use that survey to try to be really transparent and scientific about what are people thinking about? What are they worried about? How do they feel about things? So that might be of interest to folks. And then that actually that same night, we start the America Rescue Plan formal appropriations for this year. And then we'll be beginning next year in a month or so. But that's a really important process for the public to weigh in on as well as we start to help make these investments to recover. The COVID increases are scary, but we know we need to make these kind of investments to help us climb out of this and move forward in a better way, recover forward, as we say. So thanks for all the public attention to that and for you helping us talk about that.
Well, thank you for joining us, and we're out of time. Appreciate everybody listening, watching in. Don't forget, you can also ask a question, submit them, news@indianapublicmedia.org, or for Terre Haute, Columbus, Nashville, Brown County. And we'll see you again next time in August. Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks a lot, Joe. We'll see you then.